Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE. Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 10th of December. Welcome to Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you wish to get involved with today's show and get your viewpoint across, we'll be looking obviously at the situation, the fluid and ongoing situation in Syria. Quite incredible sort of scenes over the past 72 hours. Breaking news, Reuters has said Israeli tanks about 25 kilometers from Damascus at the moment. So we'll be looking at what this means for the particular tinderbox that is the Middle East at the moment, as well as other news we can look at. We may have a quick look at Biden's legacy as we come into the run-up to the final days before President-elect Donald Trump takes control. Trump, of course, over in France, meeting with Zelensky, as well as Prince William over was the new Notre Dame Cathedral was inaugurated. What that means as well for Russia with its war with Ukraine, and also the situation, of course, with Russia offering Assad asylum. A mixture of viewpoints this morning, but let's have a look at the front pages this morning, because the fallout from the toppling of Bashar al-Assad in Syria continues to lead the papers. The Times has a report from Sadnaya prison near Damascus, where many of Assad's opponents were held, tortured and killed. The papers features a photograph of a man holding up two bloody nooses found during the search for survivors. The Guardian has a similar photograph from the prison, which said it was known locally as the Human Slaughterhouse. Syria rebels rush to consolidate power as fears of regional instability mount. Reads the headlines in the Financial Times. The paper says rebel officials have met the former government to negotiate a peaceful transition of power. The Daily Mirror quotes Foreign Secretary David Lammy calling Assad's downfall a humiliation for his backers, Iran and Russia. The Guardian reports on a decision by the UK government to suspend asylum applications from Syria, saying it comes despite a lack of clarity over what lies ahead for the country. The Daily Telegraph quotes security sources who say the UK is at risk of British jihadists returning from Syria if they are freed from prison under the new regime. Former MI6 chief Sir Alex Younger is quoted by the Daily Mail saying there's now a risk a very large number of Islamic State detainees will be freed and that they would pose a chronic security threat to the UK. The Times says the Health Secretary's decision to prioritise treatment for the sickest people this winter could undermine the government's goal of reducing NHS waiting lists. Wes Streeting told health bosses yesterday to focus on stopping people dying avoidably in A&E corridors as flu cases rise this winter. But the paper quotes a senior health official who says this will probably mean the elective surgeries are delayed or cancelled. The Telegraph says criminals are being allowed to work from home to complete community sentences. The paper says a Freedom of Information request sent to the Ministry of Justice revealed offenders carried out a total of 540,000 hours of online courses last year, 12% of all completed community sentences. A government spokesperson tells the paper the majority of offenders' unpaid work was done in person and the courses were designed to help people get into work and away from crime. The Daily Express says a rise in employers' national insurance contributions introduced in the October budget will cost children's hospices around £140,000 a year each in additional staffing costs. It says seriously ill children will pay the price of the increase. The Department for Health and Social Care said it's working with NHS England to address the financial pressures facing the hospice sector. Red card for Coot is the splash on the Sun's front page. It follows the sacking of Premier League referee David Coot after he was seen in a video allegedly making derogatory comments about Liverpool's then manager Jurgen Klopp and in a photo appearing to sniff white powder through a rolled up banknote. The Sun says Coot is likely to lose £2 million in earnings following his dismissal. Although an article for the paper, former referee Mark Horsey says there could be a way back for Coot. Yes, indeed. That lem sip up the nostrils is always a bona fide cure for the sniffles. Right then, those front pages from the top today. Financial Times. Syria rebels rush to consolidate power as fears of regional instability mount. The Daily Mirror. Assad's downfall. The rat of Damascus. The Guardian. Hope and despair inside Assad's human slaughterhouse. The Times, search for captives who escaped Assad's noose. The I, UK to freeze decisions on Syrian asylum claims after the fall of regime. Telegraph, asylum cases on hold amid terror fear. The Daily Mail, Syria chaos is a chronic threat to our security. The Metro leads on a different story. This is the awful case of the teenager accused of stabbing to death Croydon schoolgirl Elaine Andam in September. Stabbed to death for a teddy bear. The Daily Express, seriously ill children will pay the price. This is the national insurance hike. The Sun leads on red card for Coot. This is the football referee, ref sacked over Klopp rant and open quotes, Coke close quote. And finally, the Daily Star. Because the Daily Star says the NASA scientists have found Uranus, which it describes as its favourite planet, to be the most important planet in the solar system. And of course, they can't resist it. NASA boffins say Daily Star's favourite planet holds key to secrets of whole universe. Here we go. We need to probe Uranus. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 10th of December.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
So, I'm joined in the studio by Richard Cow. Richard, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Giles. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. You know, look, this time last week, I was trying to think to myself, what can we possibly be talking about in Viewpoint in the week coming up? Well, I mean, this has been quite a remarkable, not even, forget about a week being a long time in politics, 72 hours ago or 4 days ago, we had no knowledge of this really coming. There had been, it seemed that a sort of a rebel alliance, if you like, had made some gains taking Aleppo, and then 24 hours later, Assad, the strongman, perhaps, of that particular region, was gone, had fled, and was found, obviously, eventually in Moscow. A quite incredible turn of events, and though we can applaud the downfall of a dictator, we've been here before, and what happens next is going to be very, very interesting indeed. Your take on this, Richard, because you obviously have a specific take on it and specific knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, no one could have predicted that HTS, for want of a better expression of this conglomerate of different groups, even themselves would never have expected that they would be in Damascus so quickly. There was some information about something happening. And Assad was warned about a couple of months back by the Russians and by the Iranians that be careful, you have to do something about it because something's going on. After all, this HTS is about 15,000 people.
Yeah.
They're all trained. And of course, if they're going on maneuvers or they're being trained, they need a signature. And this was picked up and this was told to Assad. But Assad didn't do anything or couldn't do anything about it. The other thing about it is that these guys are Salafists. They're Wahhabists. These guys aren't your baby-kissing, nice, friendly Islamic chaps.
Right.
They're not. The guys who... It's a conglomerate of different groupings. And the head of the grouping is this Golani chap. And he is ex-ISIS or Daesh or whatever you want to call it. He's the evil side of Al-Qaeda, if there is. In Idlib, where they were being... It's also like an enclave. There's about four different enclaves in Syria,
right,
where these guys have a sort of asylum, shall we say. One is right down in the south on the border of Jordan. Another one is just east of Damascus. Another one is in Hama. And this one is in Idlib. And it's sort of semi-controlled by Turkey. They sort of control most of that area. So these guys were released. The Israelis, the Turkish intelligence service and the American intelligence service all got together and basically gave the green light for something to happen. We know the involvement because at the ceasefire with Hezbollah and Israel, that day, Israel bombed a lot of the exit entry points for Lebanon and Syria.
Right.
So knew something was going to happen. So anyway, these guys went off, went east towards Aleppo, and then they suddenly realized that there wasn't much opposition. They got into Aleppo, again, very surprised, and then they started turning south towards Hama. And Hama and Homs are two areas that the father of Bashar al-Assad, well, it was actually the uncle, he's called the Butcher of Hama.
Yeah.
And back, I think, in around 1983, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think around that time, there was an uprising, it was quashed, and about 25,000 people died. So Hama has always been a bit of a hotbed, is an area. It's always been quite anti, obviously, the Assad regime. So anyway, so HDS started going south. There's only two main roads going north-south. So they went south on the, I think it's M3 and M5. I think it's,
right, okay.
If I'm assessing right. And then they suddenly find themselves at the outskirts of Damascus. There was no opposition whatsoever. The army, the so-called Syrian army, vanished, partly due to the fact that they are very, very badly paid. A soldier gets, someone told me, about $7 a month. A general gets $40 a month. These jihadists were offering $400 per weapon.
Okay.
So if you're on that sort of salary, well, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer. I mean, would you lay down your life for something like this? And also, you know, these jihadists are extremely well paid. They're well organized. This is not a ragtag bunch of militants. These guys have the latest NATO weaponry. They have tanks. They have armored vehicles. You know, it's quite a significant force. The problem is now, well, what happens now?
Yeah.
Do we have the same issue? And I think we do. Like in Iraq. It's gone. Erdogan has said that, you know, he is in charge. He's controlling this. I beg to differ. I think this is going to get out of hand very quickly. And it is starting to get out of hand. You have, the guys who've suffered out of this are the Syrian people, the Syrian population.
Yeah.
You're more than likely to see another wave of people leaving Syria trying to find asylum elsewhere. These guys, these Salafists, they're not nice people. I know CNN did an interview with Golani, and it's been done before. It's basically, you know, sponsored by the CIA. They got a lady who was semi-veiled and asking these Golani all questions. Golani's an educated guy, so he could answer quite well.
Yeah.
But you don't...
But he's the PR face, though, isn't he, of the organization?
He's the guy's more like the brains behind it.
But what I mean is he is presentable rather than perhaps the more threatening, because this is the HTS, isn't it? It's the Association for the Liberation of the Levant, and that's a broad definition. And also they were involved, weren't they, involved in Iraq in the early days as
this
well?
This is al-Nusra.
Yeah.
Basically, they changed the names depending on the sanctions being put on them. Golani himself, he's got a $10 million bounty on his head. So on the one side, the United States wanted to capture and kill this guy. On the other hand, they're training the guy.
Yeah.
More irony, you have groups that are being trained by the Pentagon, and you get groups that are trained by the CIA. And there's been some infighting between the two. So it's a bit of a mess, to put it mildly. And then if you throw in the Kurdish situation,
Yeah.
Which the Kurds, again, protected by America, they have got the northeast of Syria where the oil fields are. The oil fields and all the production of the oil is being taken by the Americans and the Kurds. None of the money is going to Damascus. So that area also is the agricultural part of Syria.
Yeah.
So all the oil revenues are not going to Damascus. Agriculture is not going to Damascus or to Syria. And then, of course, Aleppo is the industrial heartbeat of Syria.
Yeah.
And that is under Turkish control. So none of the money there was going to Syria. So Syria was basically bankrupt. It had the Caesar sanctions. So on top of the Caesar sanctions, you had, you know, the oil revenues going missing, the agricultural products going away, the industrial heartland going off. It's just, I don't think Assad could actually afford to have an army, I think, at the end of the day. Because if you look at the way, say, the Israel conflict, when Hamas came in and Hezbollah came in, you could have assumed that Syria would try and reclaim the Golan Heights.
Yeah.
It's, after all, Syrian territory. Disputed territory, shall we say.
Yeah.
But they didn't do anything. And again, if you look at on the Israeli side, the guy who's won in this is basically Netanyahu, I believe. Israel, now, who would you rather have as your neighbor? Do you want to have a compliant state that does really nothing? Or do you want to have an Islamic jihadist state next to you?
This is the thing, isn't it? I mean, this is the whole thing we had with Iraq and Saddam Hussein. Everybody was going, "Oh, this is wonderful, democratic." The people were leaping around, as we're seeing today. You know, or in the past 48 hours with the Syrians all around the world saying, "And I look forward to going back, and hopefully we'll have free and fair elections." And you just think to yourself, "Yeah, that's wonderful." However, the signs don't look all that promising in terms of what it's going to do to an already destabilized area. And yeah, if you're Netanyahu, and also he's the past 48 hours he's been going up with criminal cases and what, you know, answering those.
Well, today, I believe
today
he's in court.
Yeah, and you know, nothing deflects from a court proceeding than having a war. And as we're saying, we're seeing these we're getting reports of sort of Israeli tanks just south of Damascus, within less than 30 kilometers from Damascus.
Well, they've already encroached more of the Golan Heights.
Yeah.
So they've secured that a bit more. Also, American, Israeli, and I assume British planes are bombing military centers within Syria, because the last things they want to do is to have these jihadists with Scud missiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, they are really flattening the place. However, these jihadists, I mean, they're now going up towards the Kurdish area. They are just outside, sort of northeast of Aleppo, this Kurdish enclave, etc. They have about 50,000 prisoners who are ISIS.
We are.
So if you get these guys being released, then again, you know, and again, these are not the, you know, nice guys. These are a pretty nasty Salafists. They're the most extreme form of Islam.
Right.
Sunni Islam.
Yeah.
And how do you go and negotiate with these chaps? At the moment, you have this Golani who's sort of seemingly in charge. But then you have, because you have so many groups representing HDS, you can imagine the chaos. You say, well, you know, I deserve to be foreign minister. No, I deserve to be foreign minister. No, you can be home secretary or whatever. And the guys is going to start arguing amongst themselves. How are you going to control that? I don't think so. Now, is that a good thing for the region? No. Will Israel benefit from this? It's very difficult to say. It really is very difficult to say. It's a very dangerous game to play, because these guys are Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm.
Okay? So, for example, if you take Osama bin Laden, when Osama bin Laden first went off to Afghanistan, you know, with Soviet invasion, everything like that, he was representing Muslim Brotherhood. Okay? So you can see the genealogy of where these guys come. Hamas is Muslim Brotherhood. So where does Hamas fit in all of this? Next door to them, they've got guys who have the same sort of set of beliefs.
So if you're Israel, this is extremely bad news. And if you're Erdogan and Turkey, because you know they've had this running fight with the Kurds for 40, 50 years now.
Well, the PKK has been a thorn in the side. You go to places like Diyarbakir in southern Turkey, and it's all Kurdish.
Yeah.
Added to which, the Kurds have quite a lot of money because they do control a certain amount of oil fields. We've just talked about Syria oil fields, but also in Iraq, Mosul and all that. The problem that the Kurds have, like most of these groups, is that there's a lot of infighting. A friend of mine was going to be building an oil refinery in Iraqi Kurdistan, and he could build it in one area, but not in another, because he belonged to one type of Kurdish tribe, so he couldn't build it in the other one. So there's a lot of infighting going on even between themselves. However, if I was Erdogan, I would be a little bit nervous as well about what I've unleashed.
Yeah.
I really would. Who else wins? Well, you can look at Russia and Iran.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It couldn't have come really the worst time for both of those, and also for the United States as well. I mean, Russia has its hands full of what's going on in Ukraine at the moment. They didn't support Assad, or they couldn't go in with jet strikes, which they would have presumably have done before.
Well, you can say that to a certain extent. Having been released from the stress of Syria, they can start concentrating on Ukraine. Is Syria that important? I mean, Russia has supported Syria since the Second World War. The communist
state. They've got a naval base there.
They have, and they also have one in Libya, but it's not quite as developed. So out of Tartus and Latakia, that's where they have the naval base. This Golani here said they will still respect those bases, but I think they will just pull out. It's not like before, like during the Cold War, for example, the Soviet Union needed a warm port.
Yeah.
And the problem was that, Turkey could close the Dardanelles and no ship could go out. It's not the case anymore. The type of war that people have is very different to that sort of time. So having that, although nice to have, is probably not that essential. It's not probably high up on the agenda. What is... and also, for example, we just touched on Iran. Yeah, they've had a smack in boxing parlance. They've had a right hook, but they seem to have quite a strong chin. And again, having this sort of axis of resistance that's severely damaged, maybe it's a good thing for Iran to concentrate on their own issues. Added to which, there's another twist I think on geopolitics, which is BRICS.
This is
Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and then they added on South Africa, and there was no cohesion into what these guys were doing. Yeah, there was just a random done by a U.S. bank. What's happened now, though, is they're starting to get together a whole lot of different countries, so African countries, a couple of Latin American countries, ASEAN countries. And these countries actually are the holders of commodities. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to sort of get away from the influence the United States has with the dollar. So all commodities nowadays, if it's cement, sugar, oil, whatever, is traded in US dollars. What these guys are trying to do is they're going to say, well, we don't want to do that. We want to be able to trade in our own currency. Or they have their own cryptocurrency. They'll start having their own SWIFT-type payment structure. So when the U.S. comes and sanctions people, they basically prevent banks from carrying out any sort of contractual obligations. With BRICS, and they had a few months back a large meeting in Kazan in Russia, and they're starting to get the architecture right to have something that will, I think it sort of semi-works, but they're just sort of dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Right.
So someone like in Thailand buying oil, he can pay in Thai baht, or he can use their own crypto type currency that is going on around. So again, it's trying to sort of get away from this unipolarity that United States really wants to embrace.
Going to some of the WhatsApps that we've already got coming in. Meanwhile, good morning to you, by the way. Good morning. Kremlin, the special military operation in Ukraine will end when all goals set by President Putin are achieved. Russia's goal in Ukraine can be achieved as a result of the special military operation or as a result of negotiations. Kremlin, there are still no negotiations on Ukraine. Meanwhile, Austria has pledged support for Syrian refugees, returnees, sorry, after Assad's fall. The Austrian Chancellor, Karl Nehammer, announced support for Syrians wishing to return home following the fall of Damascus to rebels and Assad's flight. Nehammer emphasized Syria's need for its citizens during this transitional period, while Austria temporarily paused the processing of Syrian asylum applications. The move reflects Austria's hardline stance on immigration amid ongoing coalition talks and public sentiment shaped by the 2015-2016 migration crisis. Meanwhile, the UN Syria envoy Pedersen has said absolutely nobody, including the armed groups now controlling Damascus, saw what was going to happen over the past days. H2S is a dominant group controlling Damascus, but they are not the only armed group in Damascus. Different arms groups are coordinating. Well, for now, important we don't get conflict between them. Conflict in the northeast is not over yet. Israeli bombardments, movement into Syria territory need to stop, and not the nice guys. A bit like the IDF is one of the comments coming in there. The 95278 4000 is the phone number. Giles Brown, live from the studios with Viewpoints this morning. If you want to get involved with the show, here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And this coming in from Rich. The whole point using US dollars is that it is a common currency. Exchanging Thai baht to South African rand is not a pain, but it's filled with FX risk. So that's one of the comments coming in for that one.
Yeah, can I just make a comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a whole issue about having a common currency, and it works that much better if everything's in, for example, US dollars. But what the BRICS is trying to do is trying to get away from it and have a if let's say Thailand wants to pay in the, shall we say, the BRICS currency, they can do that.
Yeah.
At the moment, it'll be government to government, from what I understand. Then later on, it'll be go to bank to bank, etc., and then it'll become much more commercial. But you're right. You tie back to US dollars or whatever you have currency influences, that's going to be avoided.
952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Official. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. According to what I was reading in on this week, they say the stated aims of HTS, which is the Organization for the Liberation of the Levant, seems to have fairly limited local goals. Its stated aims are to establish fundamentalist Islamic rule in Syria rather than a wider caliphate, as groups like Islamic State tried to do. According to this week, it said that for years the HTS had shown little ambition to expand beyond Idlib. However, the push into Aleppo and obviously taking over Damascus, that could suddenly thrust them into, do you think, Richard, maybe, you know, that they could become global playmakers almost?
Global playmakers,
or at least regional playmakers.
Well, again, it's this fallout. I mean, also what people have to understand is that even though this is for the liberation of the Levant, you said, yeah?
Yeah.
A large percentage of the jihadist fighters aren't from the Levant. A lot of them are from Central Asia, from Turkmenistan,
yeah,
Uzbekistan, this sort of area. A lot of Libyans were fighting. So it's more the, shall we say, the religious aspect of what they're trying to do, and that definitely they will try to push their agenda wherever they can. So they will get the foothold in, and the what was actually quite interesting in the previous sort of conflagration the Arab Spring and everything else that followed it and the Caliphate, etc. Whenever the ISIS people try to encroach into the Kurdish region, they got bombed the hell out by the Americans. And you can see the bomb density. It's actually quite amazing. You see a fringe, like a border, that is absolutely liberated by bombing raids, basically telling ISIS that you can't go north to the Kurdish area, leave the Kurdish area alone. So they're trying to actually push the caliphate towards central and western and south Syria. That's where the Americans were trying to actually push the caliphate towards. And that's where they are at the moment.
Mm.
You have an American base at Al-Tanf, I think it's called. That is in Syria, but on the border of Iraq and Jordan.
Right.
And that's where a whole lot of these jihadists are also being trained. And they actually moved from there south across west to Damascus as well. So you have all these guys. I don't think, whenever you get these sort of jihadists, you'll always start getting splinter groups.
Yeah.
Okay, it is just...
By their very nature,
it will do it. So you can't really predict what they're going to do. It depends what they're allowed to do. And as the Americans and as the Russians have seen in Afghanistan, controlling these type of people is very, very difficult indeed. They're armed to the teeth.
Yeah. And of course, they can get themselves... The big fear as well is for... one of the reasons for the Israeli strikes is the chemical weapons capabilities of...
Well...
You know, that's going to be the...
Yeah.
Something to scare them as well, no?
Well, it depends if they actually have chemical weapons or not. There's a lot of... a lot of people actually say that when Obama said, you know, there's a red line with chemical weapons,
yeah,
and then next day suddenly chemical weapons hit a place, people sort of say, well, hold on a second, you know, Assad might be a dictator, he could be a brutal dictator, whatever, but why would he do something like this, the chemical attack on a village, when it doesn't serve him any purpose? A lot of people commenting, who know more than I do about this subject, saying that, well, actually, it could be a CIA red flag, is not unheard of.
Mm.
I mean, after all, the CIA, they started off in 1947. I think the first coup d'etat that they tried to do in their history was Syria.
Yeah.
Then afterwards, they went to Iran in 53 to try and topple, well, they did topple Mossadegh. And we know that, you know, Syria, the CIA do these sort of nefarious activities. And sometimes, you know, when you sort of look at, for example, this gassing of this village, why would Assad do that?
Well, the argument is perhaps he wants to undermine Strongman credentials, because this is the problem. Another problem with this, of course, is the thing that, you know, Assad, of course, had, you know, taking over from his father, who was an original, you know, an absolute.
But he wasn't supposed to take over. His elder brother was supposed to take over from Hafez al-Assad, but he liked fast cars and everything like that, and he crashed his Mercedes and died.
Right. Okay.
So then suddenly this ophthalmologist became leader of this regime.
Let's go live to the lines. We've got callers. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Jason. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Jason. How are yourself?
Not bad, not bad. The most significant threat in the future is not nuclear. It is chemical, but also biological warfare. And driving this is something called CRISPR. Don't ask me to... It's hard to say what it stands for, but basically, it's basically gene splicing, gene editing, and along with that, the advancements of artificial intelligence make it more and more possible that state control is lost, and this technology, anybody with a lab and a supercomputer, can basically gene splice viruses, combine viruses, and why would you use a nuclear weapon when you can take somebody out with blue eyes or brown eyes, black skin, brown skin,
right?
Or genetically specific. So the significant danger in the future for the world is something you can't see, because it'll be a virus or a biological weapon. And the problem is, once state control is lost of that, any fanatical person has the capability to kill billions, not millions, billions. And this is where we're going, because always there's a benefit in a technology for, like, during illnesses, but often everything is weaponized, and this is what will and is starting to happen.
With regards to the Syria, the situation in Syria, what's your take on this then, Jason?
It doesn't really interest me, to be honest. I'm of the mindset now, if everybody wants to fight each other, let them. Because I think what this planet needs, if natural disaster or otherwise, is a reset. I mean, the last sustainable population was in about 3.5 billion. And the way we're going, not just in the environmental sense, but in a humanity sense, I think the best evil, or the least best evil, is for this planet to get smashed, us back into oblivion and start again. Because we don't seem to be changing the way we are. We seem to want to war instead of be humane, you know. There's money to spend on wars, but not money to spend on the planet. So it's not sustainable, what I'm saying. And probably the best thing is we've got to go through a bit of pain, something really bad happens, population gets cut in half, and our impact is reduced on the planet and on one another. And because it's gone too far, there's no way we're going to look at that cop out.
Jason, thanks. I've got to get two breaks in before the thing, but thank you for your call in.
Okay, see you.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Join the studio by Richard Cowell this morning. If you want to get involved with the show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
So let's have a look at this coming in. Zoe's come in. Far from Syrians leaving Europe and going to war zone Syria, you can expect another influx of refugees leaving for Turkey and Europe. Whatever criticism you have of Assad, his government was a secular regime. HTS is a fundamentalist Sunni movement, so other minorities, it's the Shiites, the Druze, Christians, will most probably think of leaving the area. Already some of the Alawite army has crossed to Iraq. Interesting program. Thank you. Thank you, Zoe, for that one. This coming in from Richard as well, who's saying... many Syrians hope to go home, but livelihood situation in Syria is still challenging, to put it mildly. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing for them to actually come back home, and I agree with the text message that came in. More people will be leaving. And the guys who will be benefiting will be the people smugglers. There could be many more people trying to seek asylum. And also, you know, a lot of these Syrians who didn't leave in the first wave, maybe their family relatives left in the first wave. Yeah. So they will have relatives in the UK, in France, in Italy, in Germany, wherever. So they're going to go off, hop on a bus and go and join them. So I think there's going to be a lot more people looking for asylum.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's far too easy for us to think, okay, like I said, this is the danger of people saying, okay, well, that's Syria sorted. And, you know, we're going to, because obviously they, the UK, Germany have put on, have put asylum processes on hold as they try and,
absolutely,
try and work out.
Yeah, I mean, the other side about it as well is that one of the reasons why Erdogan, did this is that he's got, I don't know, about 1.5 to 2 million Syrian refugees in Turkey that he wants to, you know, shunt down into Syria, back into Syria. Because they are a drain on the economy, etc. I mean, they're cheap labor and people use them as maids and cooks and stuff like that. But he also wants to get rid of them. But now, if you have this Salafist regime, if that's what it becomes, people don't want to go down there. Why would they want to go to a strict Islamic country?
Yeah,
there's absolutely no reason.
And if you are the Syrian prime minister or a member of the Syrian bureaucracy, or you're going to be loath to stick around, aren't you? I think.
Well,
if there are reports coming in, if they've found sort of grave pits in the prisons, and that Assad's jailers were executing, prisoners in those last few days. That's what's been coming in the socials.
Yeah, you've got to be very careful though, but because people will tend to sort of magnify what's going on. And, you know, images like the nooses and this and the other. You know, you go to any of the prisons in the Middle East, you probably see exactly the same sort of stuff around there. Not that it's a good thing, but it's what it is. I could think a lot more brutal regimes than the Assad regime.
Just looking at some things coming, are there many Syrians left? Most left during the early days of the war, pre-war occupation. Is that in millions you're sending me? So Turkey have 3.7 million Syrian refugees. The UK has just over 11,000, just under 11,500. Spain has 14,491. Germany has just over, 562,168 refugees. Of course, Merkel, throwing the gates open, of course, infamously, you can say, during 2014, 2015.
Yeah, she got severely criticised for doing that.
Yeah.
That and her nuclear policy.
Yeah.
That and her nuclear policy.
Yeah.
Where she started stopping. They said, well, you know, we want to get away from nuclear to supply energy needs and start looking at oil, hence the Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2, et cetera, et cetera, and made them very much dependent on Russian oil.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had the crisis. And then the Germans people saying, well, hold it. Well, where's our nuclear power? That would have got us out of this problem. In the end, they started actually importing energy from France, which the Germans don't particularly like.
952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. Somebody's sending in saying, you know, these pictures of sort of women, you know, without headscarves, chanting in Free Syria. So saying, I saw similar things in Iraq. They regret this. They regret this today. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. From this? Dictators, three stages: democratic elections, or so it seems; silent dissent, agree or else; terminal stage, think they're unstoppable. And what happens there? 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email if you want to get involved. Saying that one of the people who has been released was a pilot who refused to bomb Hama in the 1980s, and he's been released today after being arrested at the age of 27. So yeah, there's some quite interesting stories coming out of that at the moment.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Well, the other comment, I mean, from the caller, he was talking about chemical and biological weapons now and AI, and the nuclear sort of weapons now are less important. I think also what's happened, and we've seen it in Ukraine as well with Russians, with the new missiles that they have, they can't be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the payload that you put on there, they can cause a lot of damage. We've also seen that, I think, from Iran with some of the missiles that were sent there as well. These are hypersonic ones, are extremely difficult to stop. Traditionally, planes used to shoot down these intercontinental ballistic missiles. They can't with the hypersonics. It's just too fast. You can have these sort of surface-to-air radars and missiles, but they can only shoot a certain finite number of these missiles. So what they would do is they send decoys, they get destroyed, and then they start sending over the real ones with the warheads on. So warfare now is very different to what it used to be. Nuclear deterrent is still there, but fighting a war is very, very different now than it has been for a long time.
952. This coming in, UN humanitarian agency spokesperson. Humanitarian needs in Syria are growing. Large-scale response is urgently required. Take another quick break and then back into the last 10 minutes of the first half of Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Back for the last 7 minutes or so of the first half. If you want to get involved, get your viewpoint across.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
This is Paul said, I don't understand Donald Trump. He came out all guns blazing for the hostages in Gaza, rightly so. But when millions of Christians are threatened by ISIS, he said it's not our fight. He's quite disgusted by that. Looking up that, and also locking kids in cages didn't lose him the mandate of heaven, but this would. Pat Robertson is appalled by Trump's decision to withdraw the US troops from Syria. The president is in great danger of losing his mandate for heaven. And also there's white helmet volunteers from Hamas returning to their hometown after years of displacement to stand by their people, support them during these dangerous times. People going about the missing, of course, and those who have been disappeared. That's also making some quite incredible guests. Morning, Giles. Your guest says this jihadist group have taken over Syria, is very organised, very strong, and have lots of weapons and tanks. They didn't say the same about Hezbollah, and look what happened to them. That's from Nassim. Thanks for there. And this is another one coming. Donito, otherwise the president-elect, is not interested in Syria. It's not interested in Syria as there's not much there. Well, that's a bit of a broad sweeping comment then, but fair enough. Richard, your thoughts on any of those comments that we've had in from the listeners?
One thing that is quite interesting is Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't know if you know this. He wrote a book back in 1986. Called Fighting Terrorism.
Right.
A little bit like Hitler's Mein Kampf, although better. I mean, Hitler's Mein Kampf had 10 pages on syphilis, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. But
it did explain his mindset. It's a pity people like Chamberlain and Halifax and Daley didn't actually read it because it would have given a mindset. But in this book that Netanyahu wrote, he basically listed 7 countries that you need to have either regime change or bring into chaos.
Right.
And they were Libya, Somalia, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And there's a general, an American general called Wesley Clark.
Yeah.
He's in NATO and this and the other. And he went back. And in the Pentagon Papers and the official documents on strategy, the exact same countries were put down.
Yeah.
It just shows the influence that, should we say, Israel or the Zionists have within the United States.
But I mean, for Syria to turn into, for example, Libya would be a worst case scenario, surely, because I mean that is practically ungovernable. You could argue that's practically ungovernable at the moment.
Well, yes, I mean, you know, be very careful for what you wish for, and I think it will be for the next foreseeable future. Syria will be absolutely disaster, be torn apart. Then you have, you know, the Alawites, you have the Druze, you have the. I mean, I remember going to Syria. We had sort of contracts there, we're working there, etc. Aleppo is a real nice place. We went to Latakia, again on the coast, and Damascus is a jewel. And the people were nice. People weren't talking about anything religion. No one in Syria used to say, well, I'm a Sunni, I'm a Alawite, or this and the other. No one ever used to talk about that at all, until you started getting the interventions, the Arab Springs coming along, the caliphates, etc., etc., etc. So really, the whole mindset of the area has changed. And I would say, to a certain extent, if you look at Israel, the mindset of Israel itself has changed from a relatively secular sort of country to now a biblical. If you look at the cabinet, you know, sort of it's quite right-wing, religious, eschatological. You know, it's the whole mindset, I think, of Israel since October the 7th has changed quite radically.
Well, yeah.
Now, so how do you get these guys now talking with the neighbours, who are HTS, for example, who are radically...
This is if you are of the set that you, if you're of the mindset that you are beset by enemies at every border, then this situation, you know, is
it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. That's what I'm saying. I think Netanyahu wins in this.
Yeah.
But I think Israel, it's a big question about whether they actually win at all or not.
Well, I mean, are they going to be in a state of permanent war then for the next 50 years, basically? You're going to ask yourself, aren't you? And does that serve? That's for those who are of a conspiracy theorist bent, does that not serve the current government in Israel very well indeed?
Well, I suppose if you're Israeli, I mean, I've been to Israel a few times and worked there, etc. You know, Israelis are nice guys, you know, like
you and I, etc. You know, Tel Aviv's got nice restaurants and good beaches. They probably prefer to have peace.
Yeah.
At the moment, though, it depends on... If you look like in the collective West, and you look at the media and how that is controlled, and you sort of... They get an angle on what is actually happening.
Right.
It's not necessarily representing what really is going on in that part of the world. And also people in the collective West don't really care much about the Middle East.
Well, yeah. because we look at the Middle East with broad strokes from the West.
And you look at it from a Western perspective.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. And the only time that, you know, you're bothered about Middle East is when the petrol of the pumps goes up in price. You know, that's really the only interest you have. Otherwise, you're not interested, and no one's really interested in the Middle East. People might be interested in going to.
Well, you can also argue that the problem is now with the exportation. You know, since things broke down, the strongmen in Iraq, in Libya have gone. We've seen lone wolf terrorists. We've seen the exploitation of quote unquote Islamic terrorism, which is a buzzword, and that's when you have terrorist inspired attacks taking place on the streets of Paris, in the streets of London, in the streets of Barcelona, then people do sit up.
Well, this is a result of migration. You know, if you bomb the hell out of a country, there's going to be some sort of pullback. And what it is that these migrants will start going back to Europe. I mean, Europe is the place of choice for them to go. I mean, a lot want to cross over to the UK. I don't know why, but they want to go to the UK. And of course, you're going to start building up a Muslim minority, a quite large Muslim minority, with their points of view. And they are more akin to what's going on in the Middle East.
We're going to go to the end of the first half of Viewpoint. The international and national news is up next.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
And welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint. Always live, always lively with you. I'm with you for the next 57 minutes at a wild guess, joined by Richard Cowell in the studio. If you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Just looking at some of the comments coming, we're going to move away from the situation. Although Reuters has said IFD tanks are now less than 20 miles from Damascus. Looking at some pictures live from Syria at the moment. Looks if they were trundling down the road, those trucks are not in a very good condition, to put it mildly. Scattered over a lot. It reminds me of Blackadder goes forth. What's the general procedure, sir, if I step on a mine? It's to throw yourself 100 foot in the air and scatter yourself over a larger area. And that's a bit what that looks like. Looking at some of the comments that have been coming in since we have been taking a quick coffee. Remind me what is in Syria. Cotton fields, little oil reserves that's not worth the effort. Its proven reserves are smaller than that of the UK. Nobody calls about the Middle East unless it hits their pocket. Applies to most wars. Talking of wars, let's have a look at the situation. The situation in Ukraine, because this has obviously happened. The Syrian endgame, if you will, has happened as. We have Russia still embroiled in their war in Ukraine, and what's happening there. I mean, I'm just saying off air, Richard, that we're looking at a situation where is Putin trying to get as much land as possible before Trump comes in, he said he could end it in a day. I'm not sure about that, but
well, he's a bit of a hyperbole, really. I don't think he can be. But the interesting thing about it is that we've been fighting about 2.5 years unnecessarily, with the same sort of standpoint as we were 2.5 years ago when Boris Johnson came along and said, no, we've got your back, Zelensky, carry on, you're going to win this. And quite frankly, to try and beat Russia at war is pretty damn difficult, if not impossible. And this is going to be, the only person who can lose anything is Ukraine. They have to give certain concessions. Yeah. They have to go for some sort of peace because they can't carry on. They're going to run out of money. They're going to run out of missiles. They're going to run out of people. It's just going to go to a horrible, horrible end. And the sooner they stop it, the quicker it is. Now, it's going to be a very uneasy peace because Putin will be speaking from a position of strength. They are moving. Their front is moving into Ukraine. It's not the other way around. So why would someone like Putin listen to Donald Trump, for example, other than saying, well, look, you know, we want the Donbass region, Crimea is ours as well. Odessa? Maybe Odessa is ours as well.
They want that corridor, don't they? They need that corridor of regions from the Donbass that goes all the way through to Crimea, yeah?
Yeah, to Moldova.
Yeah. And therein lies the rub as well. But because if you study military history and you know how the Soviet Union fought its wars, it's pretty much they have such a huge amount of manpower and a disregard perhaps in a way that that a Western general would have for those. I mean, we talk for those men. I mean, they throw them. I'm not saying that this is the same as the excesses of the Soviet military campaigns, but we have seen punishment battalions going forward in the early days of the conflict, and we know what happened or the miscalculation with the Wagner Group, which obviously came to a spectacular end.
Yes.
By
saying that, I mean, they in Syria, the Russians were putting forward the Wagner troops.
Yeah.
So they're still being used.
In Africa as well, of course.
In Africa as well. I mean, all the Sahel region of Africa now has gone from being French-dominated to very much heavily Russian-influenced.
Well, Russia and China have got the influences in Russia through its military and China through its economic clout. You only have to look at the railways.
Absolutely. And also what I think the people have always historically believed that the United States technically were much better at warfare than anyone else. They had the best equipment, the best planes, they had the best missiles, the best technology. And it turns out that it actually is not quite true.
But the thing is, though, as a democracy, and like it or lump it, I mean, America is a functioning democracy. Yeah. 952-784-4000 on the comments on that. whereas Russia is as I said, Gavin Esther described it as a kleptocracy. I mean, it is an autocratic state. So therefore, you can the Americans. Obviously, they have the largest military force on the planet, but they cannot get, quote, and here comes my military terminology, they cannot get stuck in the way that Russia could, because obviously that way madness would lie, even though, Russia can call on its allies from North Korea to come and go. I'm just thinking that's the same kettle of fish as we have with the Italians Germans in the Second World War.
I mean, the U.S. Army is the only army in the world that has, a Pacific Division, an Atlantic Division, an African Division, etc. I don't know how many sort of bases the Americans have. It was somewhat good to figure something like 1,300, whereas the Russians have about a dozen or something like that. And I can understand the reason why the United States was viewed as being the policeman of the world, but I think times have moved on a bit. And people now are not looking at the United States as the policeman because it's either the American way or the highway.
But the other thing is that you can't say that you're... I mean, but, Blair had this thing about being the UK being the policeman of the world, the British. And the problem is that was in a day when we... That was in a period before we had these terrorist groups who were striking in the way that they do, driven by not by sort of Marxist socialist ideology, i.e. Baader-Meinhof, IRA, whatever, but this is a grid driven by a much more dangerous religious ideology who are prepared to die for their cause in a way that perhaps, for example, Japanese Red Army faction or the Italian Red Brigades weren't willing to sacrifice.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing we were talking about earlier about how you have to understand the mindset of these people in Western Asia.
Yeah.
They have a totally different respect and sensibility to religion. You have a lot of people, for example, I mean, the Palestinians, what's left of them to a certain extent, you know, they all probably have relatives who've been killed by or imprisoned by. And it's not easy for them to forget. Look at what happened in South Lebanon when they killed Nasrallah. Now, the day before Nasrallah got killed, Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah.
I was going to say, just a reminder.
The leader of Hezbollah. He actually sent an agreement with American and French to discuss peace talks. This is why they say a whole lot of top military personnel were there to go with Nasrallah when the bunker buster bombs landed on them.
Right.
Now, that's not the issue I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is these bunker buster bombs. The reason why they're bunker busters is that they have depleted uranium.
Yeah.
And as has been seen in cities in Iraq, say Fallujah, the rates of cancer, the rates of deformities on children are through the roof. So what the United States, because the United States dropped the bombs on Nasrallah, at the behest of Netanyahu. But when you drop 82 one-ton bunker buster bombs in a very small, heavily populated, heavy density populated area, you're going to leave a legacy of woe. And in three generations or two generations, you'll start seeing people with severe cancer rates, with birth defects, etc. That all stays in the memory of the Lebanese. So it's a no-win war. When you start using things like bunker buster, your caller earlier said that, you know, nuclear bombs and things like that are outdated and all that. And I agree. But the legacy that's left behind with all these sort of actions will go on for years, over decades. So there's not going to be no stopping. Israel might be able to get rid of the Palestinians. I don't know where and how. They certainly can't get rid of them into Syria now.
Sure.
Can you see Ben-Gavir and Smotrich talking to these Golani people, etc.? No, it's not going to happen. So, you know, where do these people go now? It'd be interesting to find out and where the solution is.
952-784-4000, the phone number, studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Official. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Heading back to Ukraine, I mean, this, you know, great scenes, or the reopening of Notre Dame in Paris last week, which saw obviously Macron and Zelensky and Prince William and also Donald Trump, which I've braced a wry smile, I must admit, because when the cathedral was aflame, Trump was saying, why don't we just send in sort of seaplanes, if you remember correctly.
I remember that, yes.
Which, you know, when you've got a delicate Gothic structure, that, you know, why don't we just hit it with, you know, sort of hundreds of tons of water?
Yeah, you might be able to do it in Mar-a-Lago, but...
Yes, exactly. So, but, I mean, there's... And somebody said, I can't believe Zelensky's not there with a tie and a suit, because he was wearing sort of his usual sort of active wear. But interesting that they should take this point to meet up and discuss, because obviously it's going to be very interesting to see what, if anything, Trump can do in those first days. And if Zelensky's meeting with him, presumably, you know, the Ukrainians are, they're running out of people. They're running out of kits. They're running out of the landscaping thing. It's winter. It's midwinter. It's miserable as whatever. They're demoralized. You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I mean, what can they do? And as though we were all, you know, when the invasion started, it was like everybody's just brave Ukraine, Slav Ukraine, which is still obviously a sentiment a lot of us have. But, you know, we're back to Willy Brandt and real politic, aren't we? I mean, this is the only sensible call, or the only thing we can get if we're not going to go down to the whole sort of Chechnya situation or Grozny. And that's part one, Richard. And part two is, does this then put other nations, such as the Baltic states, such as Moldova, such as Georgia, such as Romania, who we are seeing some quite incredible...
Amazing U-turn there.
Well, I mean...
Well, there's a whole lot of these little sort of proxy wars. Azerbaijan is another one. Georgia, well, Azerbaijan, Georgia is another one that's going on. As you say, Moldova, Romania, they're all little things going on. It's a bit of a coincidence they're all happening at the same time.
Do you see Are we seeing still the fallout then from Empire, which is basically the old Soviet Union falling apart, and B, from Empire, which is the United States trying to keep its interest in the. You mean you said the Dardanelles a bit earlier, which, you know, if you're an armchair historian like me, it's okay. We're sending the Israelis sending gunboats, and we're back on the great game again, and we're poking the Russian bear.
I don't think it's ever stopped, quite frankly. There was a rapprochement from Russia back in the early 90s, you know, with Gorbachev and Yeltsin, yeah, and all that. Don't forget, Moscow, St. Petersburg, they're Western cities. They're totally not. You could be anywhere in the West. And the people themselves feel very, very Western. So there was a huge rapprochement between Russia and Europe. Now, if you look at the geopolitics of this, would the United States like this to happen? Obviously not. They would like to have division. So when the split came along, Putin started. Of course, the other thing about it is that I don't think Americans who conduct policy are fools. They probably knew full well that if they kept on pushing NATO to the West, this comes a point where, you know, something will break. And Putin basically said, yes, you know, we're not going to tolerate it. And Putin did warn the West and NATO that, you know, you can't carry on doing this in the same way that America wouldn't allow Russia to be in Cuba. You know, they didn't like it. Yeah. Exactly the same thing with it. So if you look at Zelensky and what outcomes he can have, this thing about giving part of eastern Ukraine to Russia and the rest becomes part of NATO, that's not going to happen.
95 2 78 4000. To the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, morning, Giles. It's Gary here.
Morning, Gary. How are you?
How are you going? All right. Good show today. Very good show today. All this stems back to the 90s. I've said it before. Other people have commented. This all stems back to the 90s when the West broke the agreement, whether it was written down or not, the Gentleman's Agreement, not to move east, and the Russians allowed or acquiesced to the reunification of Germany. I can't see the Russians, as far as I'm aware, they have no other disagreements with land, etc., with other nations in Europe. And obviously, we're talking about nations in NATO. I was surprised in the past couple of months to discover that in Ukraine, which in my mind is not taking this seriously enough. That might shock a few people, but if they took it seriously enough, then they would have under 25s, because they're only recruiting above the age of 25. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I wasn't aware of that one, Gary.
Right, I was going to say, if you're that desperate, then, and I know how this sounds, if you're that desperate, you'd have young kids in the bunkers, in the ruins of a large city, whether they're 10, 12, 15-year-olds. So they're not taking it as seriously as I think they should. What's raised its head the past few weeks or months. In fact, I would say it was going on last year, there was back channels, is that Zelensky has got to do a deal. The Russians have now, even more so now, the Russians have to do a deal, because that wouldn't have been allowed. If Russia wasn't in Ukraine, this week's happenings in Syria, that wouldn't have been allowed. But the ones you've got to watch out for are the Chinese. We know how to deal with the Russians, etc., but it's the Chinese. After all this, when all this calms down, watch out for Taiwan.
No.
Because remember, it's in the Chinese constitution, it's written in the Chinese constitution that they will be taking Taiwan at some point. Anyway, that's my bit.
Thank you very much, Gary. Good to hear from you, as always, my friend. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-78-4000 is the phone number.
Actually, an interesting thing on going on Gary's theme about recruitment is in Israel itself, where at the moment the Orthodox Jews, I believe that's what they're called, don't have to do military service.
Yeah.
But now they're being called. They're being told to come and do the military service. because a lot of the, shall we say, the more secular Israelis are saying, well, you know, hold on one second, this is almost a quasi-religious war. The cabinet is a fairly religious cabinet. Yet we're fighting for these guys, and these guys don't have to fight the war. Why should we die?
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to recruit the more orthodox youngsters to go into the army and to fight the war. And that's also causing quite a few ripples in the in the Israeli establishment.
I mean, Gary is talking about, you know, young, very young people fighting. I mean, Zelensky lowered the age of conscription down to 25, but conscription is a touchy subject for a democracy like this, even though they're on a war footing. I mean, Al Jazeera said that where there were patrols and they were picking up people from outside nightclubs and concerts, I'm almost sort of press ganging them. So yeah, it is.
After a certain point in time, you lose the appetite for war.
Yeah, sure.
You sort of look at it and you say, well, you know, we're not progressing. We're going backwards or forwards. It's a bit like sort of World War One and the trench warfare. Yeah. You know, what the hell? You know, what's the point? You know, the Lance Corporal blows his whistle, everyone over the top, and they all get shot to bits. You get fed up after a while.
I mean, Zelensky said that he's open to negotiations with Russia. This was, you know,
he has no option. He has no option.
And he said he'd like to make a deal and stop the madness. That's what Trump wrote on Truth Social, that well-known platform of his. But Russia has been weakened by the fall of the regime from Assad, you could argue. But Ukraine has lost maybe, 400,000 soldiers, not in, you know, wounded, etc. He's got, Trump's calling for an immediate ceasefire. In the same week that he releases his perfume called his aftershave called Fight Fight Fight. By the way,
does he?
yours for $199 a bottle.
Well, it's like his coins and just his watches as well, wasn't it?
What they call them, NFTs,
non fungible tokens.
Those are the ones. Yes.
Oh God, I mean, absolutely.
The perfect Christmas filler. But no, I mean. Because we, you know, the problem is that it is winter. It is miserable. It is, you know, Kyiv seems to be still operating as Lviv and other western areas of Ukraine seem to be operating as sort of normal. Yeah. And perhaps the new normal for Ukraine, if they don't want to have their population demoralized, wiped out, and whatever, is going to be this.
Yeah. And then reconstructing all of that's going to take forever and an age.
Well, of course it will. I mean, and then trying to say to other Ukrainians, you know, do you want to go back?
I wonder how many Ukrainians who live in Marmeya will want to go back.
Well, yes. Well, again, and that therein lies the rub, because, you know, I actually know quite a few Ukrainians here. However, not all Ukrainians who live here are perhaps, shall we say, guardians of the true light and want to get back for their country. Some of them have other interests in business down here. And on that note, before a large Audi pulls up outside with Ukrainian number plates, I'm about to hit the ad break.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. I'm joined in the studio by Richard Cowell, just watching Times nomination for Person of the Year. They've got the shortlist. It's got both Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. If Kamala Harris gets Time Person of the Year, I'm holding a hat. I have in my hand a hat. Ladies and gentlemen, Gary, you can add seasoning to it as I eat it. We live in a TikTok age, says Gary. Rather than defend their country, the young of today would rather have lip fillers. Gary, I don't know where you've got the webcam, but we were just talking about not lip fillers, but certainly looking at. Blimey, that's a rogues gallery. Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Netanyahu, and the Princess of Wales. That's like the odd one out. And these are nominations for Person of the Year. Of that lot, Richard. Yeah, no, don't say. Let's let him go there. But no, we were talking about the fact that Ukrainians have got it's that whole thing about would you go back and fight for your country if you were overseas, if you're a young Ukrainian male living in Spain. You said you think there's over 400,000 people.
Well, it's a very different age now. In the Second World War, you have that sort of jingoistic feel, you know, let's all go and almost like a Boy Scout type of attitude of going into war until they actually went into the war and suddenly realised the horrors of it.
Yeah,
that's all gone nowadays. And I think, you know, a lot of people would not, you know, pick up a weapon to go and fight for the country anymore. That's out of question.
952-78-4000. Your thoughts on that? Well, you say that, and you say they wouldn't pick up a country. But if your country was under threat, do you think that young people wouldn't go back, and they'd rather sort of sit there and TikTok and go, you know, and Instagram and say I'm here, and you know I can't hack the army because they're rude to me, and I feel offended. Because that was pretty much what people were saying, and really, I suppose, mainly about people in the coming out of depression in the 30s, though, could you argue? Or do you think there was a more concrete thing about... Because when you... I said before, I'm that worst sort of creature, an armchair historian. And I was watching something on this incredibly brave US pilot who was there in Leyte in the Philippines and, you know, got picked up and, you know, shot down by Zero and picked up by Filipino partisans, as we'd call them, or whatever. Mm. And he just said, you know, and he got shot down 9 times or something ridiculous, and he just said that he was just proud to serve his country. And you listen to the survivors of the Bloody Hundred, you know, which has been immortalized in Masters of the Universe earlier this year, and they're saying we did it because our country needed it.
Well, my dad used to fly Wellingtons and Halifaxes during the Second World War. He sort of volunteered young,
right?
Ended up flying Halifax, and some of the stories he sort of tells are quite incredible. He says it's never been as cold as flying one of these sort of bombers.
Well, yeah.
And one story was that they used to have their thermos flask next to them with tea or coffee.
Yeah.
And you know, every now and then a bullet used to go through it and stuff like that. He was flying out of Lincolnshire, and on one occasion he got appendicitis. So he couldn't go.
Right.
And none of his crew came back.
Yeah.
So you have all these things. But I think the feeling nowadays is very, very much different to those days. Mm.
Talking of outstanding behaviour during wars, let's really look at France. Exactly. Thank you very much for that. Because we had the vote of no confidence happening with Macron.
With Barnier and shortest-lived prime minister.
Yeah. I mean thoughts. We've had a vote for no confidence in France, and we've had this quite incredible situation in Romania as well, where the Romanian powers that be have demanded a rerun and annulled the count of a democratic election. Hmm. Now, there is the person who came out of nowhere on this one is a populist candidate.
So it was Russian influenced, wasn't it?
Well, this is the thing.
Russian influenced the election, and therefore it's null and void.
Yeah.
But you know, if it's not going to be Russia influencing an election in Romania, it's going to be someone else.
They're saying that it was a coordinated online campaign to promote a far right contender.
But then nearly every election should be scrapped
because
it's not. Was it Cambridge Analytica, for example?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, with Brexit. And then afterwards with the American elections.
I mean, every election now, whether you like it or not, is going to be fought out on social media. Why do you think Elon Musk... We've just seen a picture of Elon Musk up there.
And you can't stop it. It's another way of advertising for your...
For the same way the billboards and TV adverts and whatever.
Yeah, it's the next year. And as a gentleman who called, as Gary called about, yeah. Was it AI? We start getting this artificial intelligence coming along. It's just going to get... I don't know if it's going to get worse, it's going to get cleverer.
Mm, yeah. And again, the current political establishment are unaware of this whole TikTok thing, even though, having said that, the thing with Russia, Romania, thank you. They suggested that 800 TikTok accounts are being created by a foreign state, which was created, and that was created by 8 years, 8 years ago. They suddenly became active and helped it started to promote.
So sleeper agents, were in the spy films.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's going to get more and more. There's going to be more interference, etc. That you can't stop that. You can try and control it, but it's going to be an uphill task. But you have to do something to try and get a fair... But at the end of the day, it's that one person, he has his vote. And if it's influenced by this advert or that personality or the other personality, it's down to the individual.
Yeah.
How much knowledge they have on why they're voting, take the American elections.
Yeah.
You know, Biden was very popular. Biden was quite popular.
Right.
Trump was viewed as a bit of an outlier and everything like that. You know, he used to come up with something very sensible, and then migrants eating cats and dogs.
Yeah, and garbage. You know, and then we had the garbage thing as well.
That's right, the island being full of garbage.
Yeah.
And yet people sort of like to vote for this guy. Not that they have many options.
Yeah, but you see, the thing was that the Republicans concentrated on the important thing. It's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
Right?
And migration.
Yeah, and yeah, but I mean, these are the things that are affecting people. Whereas the Democrats went on this whole Taylor Swift is voting and
they preached to the converted already.
Yeah,
they totally got their as far as I'm concerned, the whole propaganda and program all totally and utterly wrong. They were not talking to the right people. You know, Trump talks to Tucker Carlson, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, Kamala Harris goes on to primetime whatever of people who are already going to be watching the program anyway.
Yeah, if Kamala does the Oprah Winfrey show, I mean, she should have done Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, for example. Absolutely. So I think, you know, it's very difficult nowadays because even the UK elections, the Conservative Party elections, for example.
Yeah.
the candidates aren't brilliant. They, you know, these are now professional politicians. They haven't probably worked. They haven't sort of been in charge of a business or anything like that. They haven't seen, a lot of them are fairly well off. And they haven't really experienced life well enough to be able to judge whether one policy is good or one policy is not.
I've not worked in a McDonald's for a while, didn't she? Infamously, to become working class overnight.
Aren't we all?
Yes, indeed. But you do kind of wonder where this is leading. And but the other thing is, going back to the Romania situation, we've got we had the vote in Georgia, we've got the EU referendum in Moldova. You know, I mean, and these are countries that are, in the grand scale of things, infant democracies, because it's only 25 years since Ceausescu was deposed.
Yeah.
In the bloodiest of those, you know, that whole Balkan thing, the whole liberation of Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, then, you know, Czechoslovakia becoming Czech Republic, and etc. And then out of you know, Romania was the bloodiest of those.
He was one of the last ones, Ceausescu, to leave. Yeah, but you can help. I mean, if you look at the part of the problem in Ukraine, that's very well documented, the interference of people like Victoria Nuland.
Right.
You know, they don't like, or the United States doesn't like a certain political party because they're maybe too leaning towards Russia. Okay, let's go and change it. So on the one side, the Americans say, well, you know, people are intervening into elections, etc. But they meddle all the time.
Yeah.
They have a reputation of meddling. The Chinese or the Russians, they tend to sort of meddle, but in a much more subtle way. The Americans are very much, you know, in your face.
Mm. And Gary came up with that at this point, and he mentioned with China and Taiwan. He said, look out for the Chinese.
Mm.
He doesn't mean when you're next shopping at your bazaar, but this is again. Whilst most of the world is looking, perhaps...
While Rome burns,
mm. or while Rome is, you know, where everybody's distracted by what's happening there and in Syria, you know, does if China were to suddenly think, well, this would be a great time for a bit of a land grab as well...
I mean, who knows? I mean, Xi Jinping and the Chinese, they have their own way of dealing with things.
Yeah.
They have a long-term plan. They don't sort of chop and change political parties left, right and centre.
Sure.
So they have a consistency. Taiwan, they view Taiwan as being part of the China.
Always have done, yeah.
Maybe they will... I mean, I know a lot of Taiwanese who are quite happy to be part of China. They've got no problems with it. On the other hand, you have a lot of Taiwanese who don't want anything to do with China. They've seen what's happened in Hong Kong. They say, hey...
Yeah.
Not here, thank you.
Exactly. And at the same time, that region had its own little sort of blip with the South Korean leader deciding to impose martial law for a couple of hours.
That didn't go down well, did it?
Didn't go down well at all. And then say, I was only kidding. You know, come on, guys, can't we all be friends?
But this is a parliament where everyone starts sort of throwing punches at each other quite regularly, or throwing chairs at each other.
Yeah, I mean, what with that, and I said before, North Korea deciding to send back up troops to sort of garrison various areas of the former Soviet Union whilst they free up troops to go and find in Ukraine. I mean, it's all connected, Richard. That's the thing.
As you said, no greater lesson to him. It's, of course, it's people's, you know, individual interests.
952-78-4000. Gary's still... I think Gary's saying, what a lovely guest you are. Right. So, Russian Defence Ministry, thank you, Richard. Russian Defences, this is Richard on the WhatsApps. Russian forces take control of, I think that's Zvolte, I think that is, in eastern Ukraine. That's from Tats. Why should we die? All soldiers should ask this. After all, one fights for land that will still be there after everybody is dead. Donald Trump's new fragrance... it says it smells like African Lynx Africa, I've been told. Well, if you're a 14-year-old boy, then you know what Lynx smells like. But yes, let's move swiftly on. And once again, there's nothing social about social media. Time for a quick break, and then we'll be back for the last 15 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Into the last 15 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint. If you want to get your view across, you've got something you want to have a moan about, almost, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Richard Carroll. Good morning to Sam and Andy and Shadul, who are sending me greetings in the morning on the official Facebook page this morning. Following me, of course, is, as always, will be Stephen Ritson on today's show. He is joining us for Europe Today, following today's show. Following Stephen, as always, will be Selena McKenzie with the Lifestyles show. And on today's show, she'll be chatting to... Adele Purdom, and about parenting through the eyes of a mother to a daughter with Down syndrome. Dr. San Martin will also be joining. Be joining Selena today, as well as Melissa Foley, founder of Hopscotch Girls, easy way to be a positive role model for kids this festive season. Okay. And the second, Hannah is with TRE in the afternoon. She'll be chatting to Roger Littlelist about the trials and tribulations of being a reporter on a local newspaper. Oh, blimey, I know about that. Sophia Lambton talks to Hannah about the upcoming Angelina Jolie biopic, what it gets about wrong about Maria Callas, and producer, singer-songwriter Tony Mantle talks to Hannah about his life in music and his new single, Listen to the Rhythm of the Falling Rain. Following that, Howard Brereton with Spain Today. All you need to know about the important stuff going on in this country between 6 and 7 before a repeat of this show, which happens from 7 until 9 before we go to our colleagues at the BBC World Service, and then we're back with Day for Daybreak in the morning. That's all coming up on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Richard Carroll, who is fast getting his own following here. What a lovely guest, etc. How can one contact Richard after the show? Very refreshing perspective of reality. Has he heard of Joshua Landis?
No.
No?
Who's Joshua Landis?
That was my question as well. Who's Joshua Landis? Perhaps we should, we'd like to know about that one. People, you can contact Richard after the show, or just send me an email at giles@tre.radio, and we will pass that on. That's giles@tre.radio, and I shall pass it on.
He's an American academic who specializes in the Middle East.
Right.
There you go.
And you knew that was just off the top of your head there, obviously.
No. I wouldn't say academic and certainly not a specialist in the Middle East. I just happen to have lived there for a long time.
Right.
And I like the country. And one thing I find it's a bit sad is how it's misrepresented in Western eyes.
Right.
We were talking about this a little bit before, you know, so yeah. If you look at Western media, you get a Western perspective.
Sure.
There are a lot of things that are not right about the Middle East, but a lot of very nice things and very good things in the Middle East. And these aren't, you know, no one likes to talk about the good things. People want to talk about the bad things.
Yeah. As I always say, the problem is that we broad stroke these regions.
I mean, there's one thing that came out. I was talking to a chap, he's American, Jewish American guy who I know. And he was saying, well, you know, in Iran, for example, the government's really unpopular. And I said to him, well, hold on a second. Well, how was this time? He said, well, people were going around in the streets of Tehran and Isfahan or whatever, and were asked, you know, do you like your government? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said, well, no, because of this, that, and the other. So it was tallied up and said, well, you know, people don't like the government. But if you go around the UK or go around Spain, you go and ask the people, you know, do you like the government? A lot of people will say, not really. I think a lot of people will say, you know, if you ask, you know, do you like the government? Everyone has a beef, whether right. It's your pension, whether it's the working conditions, whether it's the whatever, that the floods, the man, you know, people will quite readily complain about a government.
Well, it's easy to criticise.
It's very easy to criticise, but then you can't, just because you've made a sort of a poll of 100 people and they all have something to say that was negative about the government, you can't say that everyone hates the government. Because there are probably actually quite a lot of things that you do like. But you'll always voice your negatives rather than your positives.
952-784-4000. The phone number, studio@tre.radio, is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Proficient, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. The ways to get hold of us this morning. If you want to get hold of us, as I said before, those are the numbers. Looking at some of the things coming out across the wires this morning. The Israeli Defense Forces now reports, Reuters reports, citing three security sources, that Israeli tanks are less than 20 miles from the Syrian capital of Damascus.
But the IDF denies this.
Yes. So in which case...
You can't miss a tank, can you?
Well, I'm just thinking who on earth do they... Do they belong to then? I mean, it's going to be surely the next thing. 952-784-4000. The phone number. It's the last 7 minutes or so of this morning's viewpoint. Just looking at some other bits coming over. Potential effects of Israel's ceasefire with Hezbollah. That's an interesting, and just looking at whatever else is coming in on the reports. I said before, the main story is obviously what's happening Assad fleeing to Moscow. What's Assad going to do? He's going to be this lame duck, presumably like all those British agents who fled to Moscow after. I mean, Assad is his target.
The interesting thing about Assad, I mean, I don't know whether why he left. He only knows why he left. But I think one of the interesting things that happened in Syria. Assad was, I mean, Russia in 2018 came and said to Assad, look, you're bankrupt, you don't have any money, we can bankroll you, but you have to allow, you know, sort of Russian businessmen, tourism for Russians and this and the other. And Assad said, no. The Iranians also, shortly after, offered the same thing, said, well, you've got to do something because, you know, it's your kingdom's starting to smell a bit.
Yeah.
You know, there are problems afoot. And again, he said, no. But what I found quite interesting was, say, about in 2011 and 12, the Arab uprising and everything, the fallout after that, the Gulf states were all for removing Assad. Move the clock forward to 2024, to just about 6 months ago, or 4 months ago, the Gulf states were actually pro-Assad. for Assad to stay in Syria.
Right.
So you have to throw, and I'm not going to read between the lines because I don't know exactly what happened. But something must have happened that made Assad believe that his move towards the Gulf kingdoms was probably a safer bet than relying on Russia. Or the Iranians. Be interesting to find out exactly a bit more about why that happened.
Because, yeah, I mean, the last thing the Gulf states want is
Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing they want is that.
Yeah,
completely.
They've been expelled from a lot of the Gulf states.
Yeah,
they don't see eye to eye. And the last time Muslim Brotherhood got into power was in Egypt, and that didn't last very long. They got into power. They said categorically that they would treat women with equality. We had all of these sort of, you know, being almost like a secular government. Everyone treated equally. They got into power, and it wasn't. They reverted back to type.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to look at what's happened in with Taliban getting back into Afghanistan. And once again, this last week, they have removed another string of women's rights, which, you know, again, is actually very, very dangerous in terms of childbirth.
HTS, just before they moved out of Idlib and went down,
yeah.
HTS actually came out saying, well, no, actually, they're much changed. They're not like the Al-Qaeda of past. We allow women to show their face.
Oh, that's, well, hey.
They're, you know, still wearing a veil and a abaya and everything like that. But
at least you see the face.
It's all by degrees. I mean, I honestly believe the country should change internally and not have the external influence, because it never works.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see what the Gulf states is going to do in terms of their reaction to what's happening in Syria as well.
And the Abrahamic Accord. Because at the moment it's dead, the Abrahamic Accord.
Yeah.
Now it's dead, and Saudi Arabia, people are saying we're quite close to signing the Abrahamic Accord. I think maybe the leadership would like to do it, but they can't because the population is probably dead against it.
Mm.
I mean, I know when we had one of our businesses was a publishing house and a literary agency, and when the Abrahamic Accord opened up, we got several calls from editors and publishers in Israel to inviting us to join their group. It was very good for us because the media is very strong in Israel. The connection's incredible. So we called around all our countries, and we had about 40-odd countries that we represented. And every single country that was Arabic said no. The only country they said yes were interested in doing business was Iran, the Iranians. The Iranian public company said, we have no problems dealing with the Jewish editors.
Right.
And publishers.
Right.
Well, it's interesting.
Very interesting indeed. If you want to get, we've got about two minutes left this morning, if you want to get a final viewpoint in.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Those are the numbers to get involved with if you want to get involved with us on today's show. Once again, it has been my pleasure. I'm just looking at some more comments coming. Oh, and we have finally, just as we always do, we go live to the lines. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Coppet.
Gil, how are you?
Fine, yeah. I wanted to comment, the distance between the Golan Heights and Damascus is very small. It's about 60 kilometers, okay, and that depends where you measure it from, okay? And there's a big buffer zone between the two, so, you know, if Israel has taken quite a bit of the buffer zone, it could be quite very close to Damascus, yeah. So there's no contradiction. People just don't realize.
IDF are saying they're not doing it. IDF are saying it's not them.
No, IDF said that they're taking the buffer zone. Okay.
Yes.
Now, if you take the buffer zone, you are very. It depends what part of how much of the buffer zone you take. Yeah. But if you take all of it, you are very near Damascus.
Absolutely.
Okay. So there's no contradiction there. But nobody's taking more than the buffer zone, okay?
Yeah,
nobody's
but
invading the country.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, we're about to run out of time. But the IDF have said it's not us, so I'm just that's what's quite interesting.
It's reported
so.
Yeah, it's Israeli tanks, but the IDF say it's not them.
Well,
I doubt. I can't see why. It's just...
Well, on that cliffhanger, as they say, we're going to have to leave it because we're going to go to the national show. Gil, thank you for your call in. Richard, as well, thank you for your help today.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.